Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening to us on a weekly basis. For those of you who are regulars to the show, welcome back. Thanks for tuning in. Lots to talk about again today. Markets are consistently moving in the wrong direction for most people buying a house or getting a mortgage. For those people who are new to the show, you can see this show each and every week if you go to YouTube. Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, is on YouTube. You can also listen to this radio station, KCAA.com, or KCAA on the AM/FM dial. And we appear there every Saturday and Sunday during the week, and you can hear us as we bring to you solutions to your issues with the real estate world or with the mortgage world or just in general. If you're having a hard time trying to fix something at your house or get somebody out there to work for you, or it is a confusing, hard mess out there right now because there is so much changing in the world, it's hard to keep up with it. I myself have many different things that are going on in my life. And so I'm at the age, and it's funny, I talked to my cousin the other day who is 73 years old. And he said to me, look, why don't you have me on? I think there's a lot of people out there who are my age who have retired and are looking forward to either selling a home or moving on to the next challenge in life, whatever that may be, whether it's to assist younger people in the family to go to college, maybe try to help somebody with a health emergency or just long-term health care. All these things that arise late in life. He said, bring me on the show. So there are those considerations as well. Now, I had a fall recently. If you're watching me on YouTube, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But I fell. I was running on the Coast Highway. Anybody here in Southern California knows the Coast Highway is Route 1 in all the beach communities up and down California. So I fell, and it landed right on my nose and took the brunt of it. But those types of things can happen in a heartbeat, and you go from being happy and ready to get up and go towards each and every day very aggressively to being someone who just can't get off the couch. Now, in more serious situations, that can devastate a family, and what do you do about that, especially if you need money ASAP in order to pay doctor's bills, be able to afford long-term care, nursing. There's all kinds of things that you need money for. This is another thing that develops in your mind, especially right now in this day and age when there are so many things uncertain and we are bombarded. And by the way, the things we're bombarded with, remember, this is an election year in the U.S. of A., and everything and anything that you're worried about is going to be brought up by someone as the most critical, most important, and most dramatic thing that's ever happened in the history of the world. Well, it's not. So just shut the stuff off. Concentrate on your world, what you want to do, and how you want to do it. We often give this advice to people who are trying to buy real estate. Now, I know real estate right now in Southern California, especially in San Bernardino, Riverside counties, is expensive. $500,000 is probably the mean average in those counties, maybe a little bit more in Riverside. And how are you going to afford that when you're working on a, you know, $75,000 salary and you're got three kids and you're just trying to make it in your, you know, $2,500 to $3,000 a month rental unit? Yes, it is impossible to try to figure all that out without getting stressed out. Southern California, one of the most expensive real estate markets in the country, but in California, the city of San Francisco has seen the most decline in real estate prices almost in the entire country. Now, when I say decline in real estate prices, don't get excited. We're talking about going from $1.5 million to $1,275,000. Yeah, that's a huge drop numbers-wise, dollars-wise, but it's still $1,275,000. So, you know, unless you're in, you know, that $75,000 buyer out there who is working, making a good living, any other economy in the world or in maybe many other states, that affords you a nice house, but not here. And so if you're frustrated by it, yes, I understand. Now, conversely, because of what we've seen in the marketplace in general. Rates go up, inflation is high, it kills buyers from buying. But, as I said, conversely, the amount of properties for sale go up. So we've seen a dramatic upturn in the amount of properties for sale in the MLSs here in Southern California. Does that mean they're affordable? Does that mean that you can go right out and buy something? Does that mean that you're not going to have multiple offers? No, it doesn't mean any of that. It just means that there are more properties out there in the marketplace for you to go and take a look at. And I think that in and of itself is a positive sign. Granted, prices have continued to rise, and they rise in certain markets more than others. One of the good things, though, is like I said about San Francisco, 32% of the homes that have been listed over the past 6 months have all seen reduction in pricing. Now, if you're a seller and you're listening to me and you're trying to figure out how to price your home for sale, you don't like hearing that. Why? Because you're thinking, oh, man, I want the highest and best, as all sellers do. And yes, why not? Why not get the most money for your house? You earned it. You lived there a long time. Maybe you paid off the mortgage. Maybe you need, as I said, that money for health care. Maybe you need that money for college tuition for somebody, or you just need to retire to a smaller place. I understand that. But as markets mature and get to where they're going in the next iteration of whatever this is, we are currently in late spring, going into the summer market pretty soon. So those people have been looking in the spring buying season for that opportunity. There is opportunity out there for sellers who are thinking, hey, have I missed the spring buying season in order to get my property onto the market? Well, not quite yet. But it's all about pricing. It's all about how you come to the market. It's all about where you put your property in terms of what's going on in the neighborhood. Now, as a lender, as somebody who has been in the business a long time, I look at certainly what the buyer can afford, certainly what we are trying to get the buyer into in terms of the cost of the home, in terms of what the rate is, and then whatever cushion they need for certain other expenses that come along with that house. In this particular market, what you need and how you need to accumulate those amounts of money in order to pay for your closing costs, in order to pay for any repairs, in order to probably pay commission for your real estate agent, anybody who's been keeping up with that particular lawsuit and the agreement that the National Association of Realtors has had with a number of these states who have brought suit as sellers, as people who said, hey, look, you are rigging the market. You are saying we all have to pay 5%. I don't have to pay 5%. I can pay whatever I negotiate. And those lawsuits that have been lost really boils down to who's going to pay the buyer's agent. And so that could, too, become a cost to either the buyer or the seller or both. And I think it'll be a hybrid of sorts for a while until they shake it out. Or one seller just says, you know what, I'm not paying anything. Forget it. That may have already happened in some of these cases, but I don't know. So as we talk through the expenses of how this is going to play out and where we're going to be by the end of the spring buying season, going into summer, and where your particular focus is going to be, maybe you have to move by September because that's when the kids go to school and you got a new job. Maybe you're just looking to downsize and get into something prior to the end of the year because you got tax consequences, realities with the sale of your property that you don't want to deal with unless you can carry forward that basis because of the tax benefits that you have on your older property because you bought it 30, 40 years ago. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, as an older person who sells their house, you may be able to carry through your tax basis, i.e., what are you paying in taxes now to the new property that you buy? I'm going to say 70, 72. It could be less than that. But that is something to check with your tax person before you go ahead and believe what I'm saying. But that is what it is. It is a benefit, obviously, for those people who can take advantage of it. Anyway, we have a lot of things to talk about on the show. I appreciate you listening to what we have to say each and every week. And I am Jeff Barton, and this is The Mortgage Voice. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us each and every week. If you want to go to our website, it's themortgagevoice.com. There you can see and hear not only the guests that come on the show, but you can figure out a good way to get in touch with them. Email, telephone call, and we have a ton of good guests that have been on the show. Show's been on the air for 10 years, so if you go back into the archives, which you can either see there or go to kcaa.com or go to Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice on YouTube, you can find all the information you want from past guests. We are also on a number of different podcasts. Daryl, do they have that for us, please?
I sure do, Jeff. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Stitcher, iHeartMedia, Odyssey, YouTube, podclips.io, and themortgagevoice.com.
Okay, as I mentioned, themortgagevoice.com, and also podclips.io. That is a great place to go to centralize your podcasting needs. There are all kinds of topics and great people on that particular site. You know how you're searching around and you're trying to figure out, everybody's got a podcast. I don't care who it is, anybody in the news, anybody who's an actor, anybody who's a sports personality. They all have their own podcast and they're spread all over heck, and trying to find out where they are is difficult. If you have interest, whether it's in health or whether it's in finance or whether it's in dispute resolution or whether it's in sports or lifestyle, any number of different topics, you can go to one place, podclips.io. It's a place where I go for my podcasting needs, and so can you. So go there, podclips.io. Again, I'm Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice, and thanks very much for tuning into the show. So earlier segment, we were talking about some of the things that are challenges in the real estate and mortgage worlds right now, and there are many. Specifically, let's talk a little about appraisals, the appraisal business, how properties are valued, and then how lenders take that valuation from appraisals and assess risk. All of this is about the future, right? People aren't worried about appraisals when the market conditions are such that there are very few obstacles in the way of property values going up, the value of the portfolio of the lender going up, and the ease by which they can borrow money and lend it to you at a profit. You never saw any of these appraisal issues, except the fact that there weren't enough appraisers during COVID. Why? Because you had rates at, you know, 3%, 4% in that range. So it was like, printing money for a lot of these lenders. And so nobody worried about appraisers. Well, the GSEs, now GSE is the government service enterprises. They are Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae, all the federal government entities. Well, they're quasi-governmental, right? They're not really. They're owned in part by the federal government, but they are privately owned. And there have been, many attempts since 2008 when they got taken over and bailed out by the federal government to be able to get them back private again. But none of them have succeeded because they're a moneymaker for the government, and why give it up? So anyway, in that, the GSEs themselves have been wondering about the portfolio of loans coming in the door. And they're worried about it now because, hey, is there a recession? Is there not a recession? Are we going to have a soft landing? When is inflation going to end? And again, as I said earlier, the heightened sensitivity to everybody because it's an election year and everybody's yelling about something that may affect you emotionally. And of course, that makes the fight or flight syndrome in your own particular thought process really go haywire. So in this, the GSEs and the appraisers, they came up with some three or four different items that they wanted to deal with in terms of trying to fix or make better appraisers. Now, there have been, aside from all that, there have been those in the marketplace who have said, get rid of appraisals. And they say this because they think appraisals themselves are subject or too subjective in terms of what the appraisal. They want to go to an electronic model, right? Like the when you're going to get a refinance in certain markets, you can just go to the computer and pull up the comps and figure out through a number of different programs what the house is worth. Heck, Zillow's been doing it for years. So is Realtor.com. So is Redfin. You can figure out pretty closely, just based on comparable sales, what that house is worth and what that house will appraise at without the appraiser themselves. But there is an issue when it comes to the human element being able to see actual differences and be able to verify actual condition of the home. These are some of the things that why we have still humans doing this job. Now, I'm not of the mind to get rid of these appraisers. I think their invaluable service is continuing to be needed, but with the GSEs asking for and looking at trying to change the nature of appraisals, let's just get to the three or four different things that they're talking about. Okay, the evaluating of how lenders assess collateral risk. What does that mean? They don't want to lose money, right? So they want to make sure that the appraisal that they get is still the appraisal that makes that house worth what it is 2, 3, 5, 6 years down the line, plus inflation, plus accrued value and worth, because the market keeps going up. Okay, number one, reduction in the reliance on full appraisals. So they wanted to go more to the electronic model, whereby they're just going by what the computer model says about what the value of that house is. One, cuts down on time, cuts down on expense, and they can lend to a percentage of whatever that appraisal is based on their own internal guidelines about how they want to lend. That's number one that they're thinking about doing. Higher quality appraisal is number two. Now, what do they mean by higher quality appraisal? Usually when I've been in, as I said, a long time, when appraisals used to be done by hand, when there were no computers doing most of this work, when it was done by a person. Now, I sound like a dinosaur, right? And a lot of things have changed. And over the next, I would say quicker than slower, over the next 2 years, you're going to see AI take over a lot of these industries too. So, yes, you will be talking to a person, but they will be, you know, artificial intelligence people. I.e. that they will give you the impression that they are a person handling your appraisal, but they will not be those people doing that work. They will just be your particular, whatever it is, AI doing the work. Regardless, today we're talking about this way of doing it, and the GSE's answer to this is better quality appraisal. So in my estimation, that means somebody really has to go out and check on these houses. If someone says they have a pool, and it makes that house 10 to 15% more valuable than the house down the street that doesn't have a pool, same square footage, same model plan, same everything else, I want to go out there and make sure that the pool itself is in great working order so that I can then adjust the appraisal to include the pool. So you go out there and, you know, the pool's fine, but it's filled with dirt and flowers. So you can't really call that a pool anymore. So therefore, you're not going to get the adjustment. These are the types of things, although that is quite an exaggeration, but these are the types of things, in my mind, that higher quality appraisal means. It means getting a human being out there to make sure that that particular property is what it says it is. Conversely, however, as we've talked about on this show, if you go out there and you notice that there is a person of different national origin than you, a different race than you, there have been appraisals that go out there and appraise the properties based on that, not based on the property itself, but based on who's living there. And that obviously is discriminatory and can't be handled. So that is an underquality, which speaks to, hey, let's just make it electronic. So there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes to try to fix what is perceived as a problem with the appraisals currently. And the last one, of course, is for the above two. Number three is they need better data. Now, that's true. In every situation, whether it be lending, whether it be buying, or whether it be appraising, properties need better data. What does that mean? What's the neighborhood like? What are the crime statistics? What's that house cost? Do they want a new roof? What are those people like? Are they good to go in terms of their credit worthiness to buy that house and pay that mortgage for 30 years? All of these elements go into better data. Now, if we had higher quality data in order to input into the appraisal system, we might get a better electronic appraisal. As of right now, it's uncertain as to how that's going to happen unless it happens, as I said, with AI being the driver behind all reduction in human resources, all the ways that that savings can be brought to you. There's a danger in it, of course. Anyway, I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to the Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show each and every week. We come to you, we bring to you solutions because I know you have questions and problems and things you're thinking about. Where's the market going? Can I afford it? How many jobs do I have to have in order to put food on the table? There are a lot of decisions you got to make, especially in this market where we're really not sure where the rates are going. And certainly we can say one thing about this market. There are more properties on the market today than there were a month ago. Why? Because the mortgage interest rates went up. And that's the one positive thing I can say. However, there are a number of different companies who can bring you solutions as to how you can get into this market with the long-term solution of refinancing or selling the property once property values go up. I love those strategies just because that's forward thinking in how you are going to prepare for your future, and those are the people that take advantage in a market like this. Joining me for the first time, who hasn't been on the show, and I really appreciate it, somebody who has way more experience in the lending world and the solutions world than I do, from OCMBC, the Executive Vice President of Non-QM, is Sean Dennison. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing excellent. Thanks for having me. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, and thank you very much. Through my long-winded explanation as to where we are in the market, what do you see is happening out there?
You know, I think we all see the stickiness of inflation. We all see the 10-year still remaining elevated. Rates have increased over the last week and a half.
Yep.
You know, so that's a lot of volatility out there. Keeping things interesting, you know, rate cuts were what they were looking at, 6 of them this year. Now we might get one at the end of the year.
Right.
So, you know, it's definitely an interesting, challenging time, but, you know, there's still out there, there's still people out there and borrowers that need our help. So, you know, CNBC and three DBAs are doing our best to help our brokers and help the borrowers.
Interesting. There's so many questions I want to ask you because you have the insight to it, but let's just get to the nitty-gritty specifics of some of these things. Loans that you're doing, what are you offering in terms of solutions for borrowers who still want to borrow but might not necessarily have all the documents for a full-doc loan or the ability to be able to get into a property in a more conventional way?
Yeah, I mean, thank you for asking.
Sure.
For you know, OCMBC and LoanStream, Lending Pros and Forward Lending, we really specialize in the non-QM, the non-qualified mortgage. And these are, I'd say, creative. They are flexible type loans. I mean, lending up to 90% LTV on full and alt doc being, you know, bank statement loans, profit
right.
loss loans, 1099, credit scores, a lot of flexibility around credit, down to 600 FICOs, loan amounts up to 4 million, you know, 5-year, 7-year ARMs, 30, 40-year fixed. The 40-year fix that we currently offer now is huge because it helps space out the debt, decrease the payment, which really helps with the DTI. Interest-only options. We offer temporary buy-down options mm-hmm. in the non-QM space, so that's rare. So just a lot of flexibility in non-QM that's really you know, helping drive business and getting borrowers, you know, in their homes and helping them keep their homes.
In a market like this, do you see that the non-QM space, the loan programs that you just talked about in a general way, do you think the demand for those programs are actually far exceeding what's going on in conventional or Govy programs?
I think so.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I believe so. I mean, when you're looking, you know, outside of, you know, you have your government, you've got your Streamlines and your IRLs, which are very popular right now as well.
Right.
But I think when you're coming down to full doc and you know, the self-employed borrowers and those investors out there, you know, there's the non-QM space is extremely popular right now, extremely beneficial because of the flexibility. You know, the debt, you know, debt service coverage ratio loans, when you're qualifying just off the borrowers or the property's cash flow,
mm-hmm.
so there's no employment, there's no income needed. We're just looking at the cash flow of the property. Very, very popular right now. And again, you know, speaking to, you know, the self-employed borrowers, having bank statement options out there, so no tax returns, having P&L options out there. 1099 options, asset utilization options. So there's a lot more flexibility and a lot more program offerings when you're looking in the non-QM space. And non-QM isn't as rate sensitive as the agency loans and the Fannie Freddie stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that the borrowers that come to the non-QM space are also not as rate sensitive. I think they realize what they're getting in terms of product and flexibility, as you mentioned, versus having to worry about the monthly, whether it's a DSCR or some other kind of business developed loan through either the receipts from the business or a combination of personal and business, gives that kind of borrower the ability to get into something and then worry about the long-term financing after.
Absolutely. Yeah, and there's just the flexibility within the non-QM space. That's what's so attractive. And you know, it's not so cut and dry, and you can get creative and you can be flexible, and it's that's what I love about it, and that's why I've been doing non-QM for, you know, 7 years, and it's just the most interesting product out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. We talk a lot about it on this show because most of the borrowers in our listening area can't afford, in a traditional sense, the way property values have gone up, even in San Bernardino and Riverside counties, which are now sporting, you know, $500,000 to $750,000 easily. And for a lot of the borrowers out there who are, you know, are not necessarily the biggest cash earners, it's a good way that they can go if they can use other ways to be able to get into a property.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We talked in an earlier section of the show about appraisals. And I had been talking about the models that they're looking at in terms of what makes an appraisal a good appraisal, what makes an appraisal something that has all the right data in order to justify the risk that the lender is taking on. What's your feeling on appraisals, where they're going, and are you having difficulty at all getting enough appraisals done in the areas that you're doing business?
You know, I think, you know, from an appraisal standpoint, we don't seem to be having any issue around getting appraisals, having them ordered, you know, SLAs on appraisals. The level of quality of the appraisals that are coming through are good. You know, we're looking at the comps and just the detail that the appraisers are providing from a quality standpoint seem to be fine.
Okay, that's interesting that you say that. Some of the articles I've been reading talked about how some of the improvements in the details that appraisers are using can be really taken over through either artificial intelligence or a computer model that a lot of times we use if we're doing, you know, back in the day when we were doing just computer-based models on appraisals for refinances so that there didn't have to be an in-person appraisal done on the property. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we, you know, in the non-QM space, which can have higher loan amounts, we're always looking for appraisals. Appraisals are required on all of our non-QM product. Now, what we'll also get, depending on loan amount size, is we'll get that desk review, that ARR, that collateral desk analysis, that AI tool that helps support the value in that appraisal, and we're looking for, you know, any type of variance there. So it just helps really tie up value, make sure collateral's safe, and our LTV strong.
Oh, that's excellent. I mean, I was picturing a world by which we would have fewer people, and you're saying, no, this is an augmentation of what we already have in order to just, you know, shore up what may be missing in a general appraisal, but also can use big data in terms of the trends in the neighborhood and the nation in wherever we're doing the appraisal.
Exactly. Yeah, it just gives us another lens to look through to make sure, you know, the property that we're lending on and the value that we're using is strong.
Okay, that's interesting. We have about a minute left. I wanted to give you an opportunity to let people know how they might be able to get in touch with you or your team in order to talk about some of the great programs you're talking about here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I work for OCMBC. LoanStream is one of our DBAs. Cheryl Smith is our AE that I know works with Malibu, and she can be reached at you know, Cheryl Smith, C Smith at lsmortgage.com. Reach out to her. An excellent AE, has all the information. Her and I work together closely to help brokers, to help borrowers get their non-QM questions answered. With OCMBC, LoanStream, 3DBAs, we have a large credit box when it comes to non-QM. And you know, we're still growing. We hit record funding last month, and we're looking to eclipse that this month. So lots of business out there, lots of positive momentum, and just thank you for having me.
Thank you, Sean. Thanks a lot very much for coming on. It's short notice. I appreciate that. And you knocked it out of the park. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That's Sean Dennison from OCMBC. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in to listening to us on a weekly basis as we bring to you information that will help you make determinate decisions about whether you're going to buy, whether you're going to sell, you refinance. I know it's tough out there. I know it's not easy because the rates have gone up and the property values have really gone up. There are some markets in the country where, you know, listing price has been reduced about 30%. But for the most part, it is a struggle, and I understand that. And that's why we bring Wendy on the show each and every week, or not each and every week, but I'd like to have her each and every week. Talk about what's going on at Kind Lending and how they might be able to help you get into the property of your dreams. Wendy Van Wessel from Kind Lending joins us now. Wendy, how are you?
I'm just fine, Jeff. Thank you for asking, and I hope you're well as too.
Thank you, and thanks very much. Okay, market conditions. Wendy and I were talking off air just a little bit about what was happening, what we thought was going to happen, and now it looks like it's about a year away. So the confusing part of all this is, what do we tell the consumers?
Well, there are still things you can do out there. Right now, the people that are having the lower interest rates, they're on average have about $340,000 worth of equity in their homes, and if they've had to dip into their credit cards are often at 22 and 29%. Well, in the high nines, low tens, you can get up to $350 in a standalone 30-year fixed or HELOC, home equity line of credit with 10 years of interest only, to pay down those credit cards at that lower rate and then maybe save up towards where you want to go next. We were hoping for a rate cut in June, and so my significant other said, oh, no way that's going to happen.
No,
well, he was right.
I don't think so.
Yep. Yeah, he was right. And then there's a 69% chance that it might happen in September. Don't think so. It's because the inflation is still high, and the feds can't really cut the rates when the inflation is high. It just doesn't, it's not a good look. It looks like you're buying something or buying votes. So it doesn't make sense when the inflation is high to cut the rates. We're thinking maybe next year, we're hoping. So
right.
Now it's a really good time to set yourself up with the HELOC, to pay down your credit cards, to get your FICO score up there. Or there's still loans out there. I mean, look at the CalHAFA Dream that has 100% financing, or the CalHAFA My Home that's 100% financing. There's options with non-QM becoming very popular with bank statement versus taxes. And we will calculate your income for you if you like, or you go to your loan officer and they'll get it all done for you to make sure that you qualify. But those non-QM loans, you can do a profit and loss. No bank statements to show that you're continuing to make that income. Bank statements, you can do asset depletion. You can do DSCRs. They're still out there.
Tell me about asset depletion. Explain that a little bit more. I hear that thrown around a lot, and I think the consumer is very confused by what the heck that is.
Asset depletion is if you have money in your stocks and bonds and other things, you can do a percentage of it and divide it by 84, and if that covers your mortgage payment, you're good.
So this is borne out by whatever the investment house or whatever the statements are from there and the underwriting process at Kind?
Yes, yes. And then you just times whatever your payment is, what you want to get, times it by 84, and can you afford it with the assets that you have socked away for your retirement, then that's all you need to qualify for the loan.
Okay, so that basically is your ability to repay. That's what the rule is being satisfied at, right?
Correct. And it's also the same thing as if you have a 401k and you take a loan out on it, so you don't get penalized because you're not of age.
Right.
If you take a loan out on it, you can utilize that for the down payment or to pay off credit if you need to, and that does not get included in your debt-to-income calculations because you have the money in your 401k to guarantee that you'll make the payments.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's talk about inflation a little bit. Now, when it was at 9%, people were saying it was high. Now it's at 3.5%, and people are saying it's high. Do we get really lost in the numbers to really understand what we're talking about? I mean, there's
we
so
much. We do, because you know what? You know what's so weird is gas and housing is one of the most expensive things that we
have. And it's not included. Right.
They took that out in the 80s, and I don't know why, because it's not a fair representation. They like it to be at 2%. Right, that's what we are always at, and then it went up to 3.5% because our inflation was at 3.5%. So should we always be thinking of 3.5% as being good? I don't know. I hope that we get our groceries and all of the other things in line. The gas, which is so important, and the housing expenses. It needs to turn around, become a little better, and I don't want to say anything about politics. But they need to make some good decisions.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say not politics, but this is a crazy year because it is political, and it is a rerun of what we did 4 years ago, really what we've been doing for the last 12 years. And so because of the divide in government, we get nothing done. Here in California, we only have one government, really. It's a very Democratic government, and however
it's blue.
Yeah, right, exactly. Well, I was just talking specifically about the gas tax, and maybe, you know, reducing some of that in order to give people a break. I don't know why that's not ever a solution. But in terms of inflation and how people are living on a day-to-day basis, you get two messages everywhere you go. Now, I don't know whether, as you said, it's political or whether that's the reality, but I do know groceries have gone up, and I do know that I spend less now than I used to on certain things that I liked, but I can't because it's too expensive. I know that.
Yeah. Everybody's tightening their belt. They have to. And so we're a very strong country. We have gases. We have the capability to make things that we gave our chip making capabilities away across the ocean. They should bring them back in here. Our Americans are very smart and they like to work. They have good work ethics. I remember my father telling me, the Americans, they always have a 3-day weekend. And I'm thinking to myself, in Holland, where he was from, they have 6 weeks paid vacation. Americans don't have that.
No, although if depending on who you talk to, you know, that's what they're going for. So it's interesting, the market itself, where it's going. Some of the products that you're offering and the rates that they are, in the general sense, we see rates 30-year fixed at about 7.25% to 7.5%. Is that right?
That's about right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was like a month ago that it was 6.5%.
Yes, and we thought it was going to get back down to 6.
Yeah, no.
We were hoping anyway.
No, and I think that's still a possibility, but I always wonder every time that you see the market do what it does it really do what it does, or is it just about what the perceptions are as whoever's going to be next in line or wherever this person is who's running the place? Because people's pocketbooks are what determines who they're going to vote for. All these other issues are really not that important. If you're making less now than you were like last year, you're going to be unhappy. If you're making more, you're going to be happy. And that's just kind of the way it is.
But are you making more enough to compensate for the price increases?
Well, that's what
you're making less.
Right. I mean, in terms of that, that's why these numbers are always so silly to me, because like you said, gas and food,
housing.
Add those back in, it's more like 7% inflation, right? But if you take them out, it's 3.5%. So if you get a 5% raise, you're doing a little bit better, but are you really doing a little bit better? And those decisions that are being made by somebody affect really, you know, the direction of the country and how lending is, how money is being lent to people who lend it out to the consumer. And now I know Kind has pretty deep pockets in terms of where they get their money and how that plays out in terms of the rate and the spread and all that other stuff. Where do you see it heading, I guess, in the near term through the election in November?
I think that we probably won't see a rate cut. I'm hoping that we might, but I don't want them to make it look like they're buying the election or trying to buy the election, because if you have inflation high, they're not going to touch it. The Fed's not going to touch the rate,
right?
Because it doesn't make sense to. So I think next year, I think the rates will go down. But you still have options now. You still have options to get that house that you want,
right,
that you want to buy, and then in 6 months you can refinance it with the lower rates. You also have the HELOC options, this, and the standalone 30-year seconds for the equity that you have in your current house if you don't want to give up your low interest rate. If you're not doing your taxes the way because you want to get more money back, you have the bank statement option. You have all those other non-QM options. And people are buying up a lot of houses, the non-owner-occupied homes, if they want their kid to finish college in California and then they want to go and buy a house now in another state and then retire there. There's still movement in the market, but I think that they're tired of waiting on the sidelines for the rates,
mm-hmm,
and for the inventory to come back. So there's more movement now. I see it. And summer's always more of a bustling, busy time for mortgages. I just think that I don't think we're going to have a rate cut this year.
I agree with
that.
Yep.
Make the move and then think about refinancing in 6 months, or build up your credit score and your FICO so you get better pricing with that standalone second or that HELOC, a 30-year fixed or HELOC. You can educate yourself. You can look and see what's out there. But I don't see us not moving. I see it always moving in the mortgage industry. The poor people in the mortgage industry, they've been hit too.
Yeah, they have. Wendy, we're out of time. I appreciate you coming on the show. As always, you're the greatest. Could you let people know how they can get in touch with you if they need to talk
Certainly.
To you? Great.
Certainly. My name is Wendy Van Wessel, and so that would be wvanwessel@kindlending.com or 818-292-2572. And if you have any questions, just let me know. I'm here to help.
Wendy, thank you very much, as always, for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Wendy Van Wessel from Kind Lending. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Jeff Barton, and this is themortgagevoice.com. No, it's not. It's just Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice. Themortgagevoice.com is my website. If you go there and see what we do each and every week, you can see the guests that come on the show. You can get in touch with them directly through their website or through their email, or just call them up. A lot of these people that come on the show are anxious to hear your questions about the products that they talk about on the show. Today, obviously, we've had some great people on the show, and I really appreciate that. We always bring to you the best and brightest in terms of market and market players who can bring you products that you may or may not have heard of, but mostly like any other business. It's a personal relationship that you develop with your lender, with your real estate agent, with the people who try to make you make your decisions in the real estate purchase or the real estate sale or the mortgage, the refinance, better and easier. Obviously, it's your decision, but more information is more power, and the more power you have is really going to be able to help you make those decisions in a more clear and a concise and a direct manner. Some of the things that we talked about on the show today are interesting in terms of where does the industry lie in certain aspects of what they're trying to decide to do. Currently, we're in a high-rate environment. The 30-year fixed rate is 7.43, 15 years at 6.84, FHA is at 6.90, and the jumbo is at 7.62. That's right, you've heard it. We're almost back up to 8%. Now, why has it been like that? Because, like many things in our life, we tend to look optimistically at what might happen in the future. Now, the stock market and the way the rates go and the bond market, all these things are bought and sold in order to make people money, usually the traders, but certainly the people who are invested in that, whether it's your, you know, retirement fund, whether it's your teacher fund, whether, you know, there are so many ways that you don't know that you're invested in all of these things because you may not know that the fund or the bank or the things that you put your money in are also invested in these things. And those things are important to know, just because what we're doing now is trying to sort through this particular aspect of the market to get to where we want to be. But where we want to be is not where we are. And where we are Unfortunately, the mortgage market has reacted poorly to Jerome Powell saying that we're going to remain higher for longer. And that means that the rates that the banks, member banks, borrow in terms of having the daily cash they need in order to satisfy the requirement that the Fed has on all member banks in order to keep a certain amount of money on hand, they're going to stay at 5.25% to 5.75%, and those numbers dictate that, you know, we're going to probably have mortgage interest rates stay high. We were anticipating lower rates, which is why the mortgage rates came down. They were acting on a what if. The what if didn't happen, and they shot right back up. We're back to where we were back in November, and we may get back up to 8% before too long. Not a good thing. However, what it does is it increases the inventory in the market. Talked about that earlier. It also brings to mind affordability. And as I said, we've had 34% of all homes listed in America reduce price. Now, granted, prices are already elevated, so if they reduce a little, is it really much of a reduction? But at least it's not an increase in prices in those 34% homes, and it's an indication where we might be headed if, in fact, we get lower and lower demand on housing. Certainly, lower prices would help everybody. However, that's always been offset by lower mortgage rates. I'd like to see them both come down. But, again, market was way ahead of itself. Where it is today is exactly where it is. Now, the mortgage rates, they're dependent upon inflation. They're dependent upon the job growth, right? And unfortunately, inflation is at 3.25%. Not good. They want 2%. Now, I don't know why 2% is the magic number, but it is. So until they get to around, below 3%, we're not going to see a rate cut. And that's unfortunate for obviously a lot of reasons. Your credit card is going to remain high. Your car loan is going to remain high. The money you borrow on your credit card is going to continually cost you more money. I don't know. Daryl, did you see this? The student loan program and how students who have been paying for 10 years plus owe more now than when they started paying it 10 years ago?
Yeah, I had a few of those. And, they are absolutely – they never go away.
Yeah, it seems like, that's what the guy in the corner used to charge you, right? That debilitating interest rate that just – plus, the cost of the money and then the cost of the money and then you're paying interest on the interest and all of a sudden you owe more than – that just doesn't seem right to me.
Well, it's less than interest only that you're paying back. So, I mean, you never catch up.
You never catch up. And I think there's something to be said, especially for people starting out in life, that maybe shouldn't have borrowed the kind of money that they borrowed to begin with. But if you're borrowing $20,000, 10 years later you owe $30,000, that doesn't seem right either.
Well, it's an easy decision if you divest it when you start school, right?
Right.
Especially if you don't have the money to start.
Yeah, well, none of these people do.
Sign here. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. No, I talked to a person. Now, as everyone here knows on the show, I moonlight as an EMT, and I've been doing that job for a number of years now. Worked with mostly young people. Actually, one of the reasons I did the job is because I could be able to tap into younger people. 18 to 25 is really the entry-level position in the EMT world, paramedic world, and emergency services. So I'm talking to a lot of people who have student debt, and they're talking about student debt in a responsible way, not in a frivolous way. Like, the degrees they're getting, are obviously they're working in the medical field, so most of them are trying to get degrees either as nurses or doctors or any number of thousands of jobs in the medical field. And this one person that I talked to was yesterday, who was sitting with me down at the Galen Center as there was some volleyball tournament we were in. Anyway, she was telling me about her particular debt and how she got into it and, her plan to get out of it. I think there has to be something done. I'm not sure forgiving the debt is right, but I'm not sure, as I said, owing more 10 years later after I've been paying for 10 years is the answer either. That sounds more like illegal crime to me. Anyway, let's get to a few more things on the list here before we wrap up shop. We were talking about the mortgage rates and how inflation and job growth are two things driving the market, what's happening in the economy. Now, the economy is changing, right? We talked about AI and how AI is affecting a lot of different industries. In the mortgage industry, processors, mortgage underwriters, funders, all of these jobs are going to go by the ways of the dodo. just simply because it's not needed if you can get an automated person or an automated program or an automated artificial intelligence to be able to handle the job. As we talked about in the appraisal world, this is happening in the mortgage world. So as we see profits increase in certain industries, as we see business do better in certain industries, remember that those people who are being replaced by automation, generally, and we've seen it in industries for hundreds of years, they're unemployed. But we see the economy doing well because the businesses that are saving based on not having to pay a human being, they're doing well. So this is the dichotomy within the economy as a whole, as I see it. And so the things that I think are really important to people who are working, as I said, that $76,000 a year job a couple segments back, those are the types of people who have to worry about certain things, and they're worried primarily about housing or shelter, as they might say, and also they're worried about making sure they have enough money to pay for their bills. Now, some of the things that you might be able to reduce, I put together a bit of a list, and these are from some of the research, not done by me, but the experts either at HousingWire or HousingWire or MSN or Yahoo, or I'm just trying to think of some of the other sites I've gone to. Anyway, let's just get it. I only have about a minute and a half left. Childcare. Childcare is the number one expense for most families of children under 5 years old. Why? Because kids don't go to school. You got to go to work, and somebody's got to take care of your kids. It could be easily $400 to $500 a month. There is no cure for that except for government programs, and I'm all for expanding that particular thing. Electronic appliances. Okay, you don't think they're on, right? Well, they are on, and they suck a lot of energy. And the list I'm going to read to you here could be $100, $100 to $200 extra a month that you're paying in your electric bill that you're not even aware of it. The electronic appliances themselves, like your TV set. Now, if you have a flat screen TV, you got to shut that off or it sucks electricity. If you have a fish pond, think about that. It pumps water. You don't even think about it, right? Could be $700-$800 a year. Hot water, the recycling pump that you have on your hot water heater to make sure that you have instant hot water hot on, or when you turn on the water, it comes on hot. Could be $40-$50 a year. You have a set top on your box. A set-top box, meaning that on top of your TV or on top of your stereo, you have a box that's sitting there. It's either cable or it's a video game. That could be $50, $60, $100 a year. You also have fans. Fans are the worst because they come on automatically. You got to shut that stuff off. And the aquarium. If you have an aquarium, that's another expense. Now, I know you can't shut the aquarium off, but it is things that you can do in order to be able to lower these bills, because even a little bit helps a lot. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.